Good afternoon, good day for those of you down under. I was reprimanded in an email this past week saying I didn't do a very good Australian accent, so I'm not going to bother anymore, okay? Yes, welcome to program 420 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced, UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Tonight, well, unfortunately, Dave Furlott can't be with us. We look forward to having him back again next week. I'm going to miss his take tonight. But part two of an interview that we did with the late Kenny Young and audio clips of the Trumbull County Police chase of UFOs down there in Ohio. Rounding us out tonight, abductee activist John Velez. Boy, got a lot of email about the Trumbull County police chase. We'll get into that in a few minutes. And still the triangular UFO sighting reports come in. For instance, Phoenix, Arizona, on October 22nd at around 8:11 p.m., a commercial airplane was crossing in front of the witness on the standard landing pattern for Phoenix Sky Harbor on October 27th, when out of nowhere, a very fast triangular-shaped object with three very small yellow lights in a row on its bottom went from northwest to southeast, very silently and out of sight in a matter of about 2 seconds. The distance the large object flew incredibly quickly and with three lights in a row on the bottom. It's rip and read time, folks. Our thanks to Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center for that report and from this one from Strawberry, California. While on a hunting trip on October 26th, witness was hiking along a ridge and stopped for a break at around the 6,000 feet elevation. Said he looked straight across a very big canyon at around 3 p.m. and there was something very shiny sitting on a cliff's edge. And then something appeared in the sky at about 1,000 yards or so to the left that looked like a black crow gliding through the sky there. He realized it seemed to be too large and too far away from him to be a bird, so he put up his binoculars to take a closer look for 30 seconds of a matte black triangular shape. It tilted slightly to the left, showing its belly, and there appeared to be a glass cockpit on the underside toward the front. The glass in the cockpit looked very different, almost indescribable. He said there was no noise and no motors to be seen, and with a quick turn to the right, it disappeared over the top of a far mountain. He sat there stunned and confused for about 20 minutes, and the shiny object was still on the cliff's edge, and 1,000 yards to the right was a flat area carved out of the cliff's edge with some flickering. The flickering looked like a very small mirror effect. Other flickering was also seen in the area. out of Denver, Colorado, while flying westbound at FL 380 at about 38,000 feet. The pilot who reported this to Peter Davenport said his first officer and he saw a very bright white light at their 9 o'clock high position. The object was just east of Denver at around 11:15 on October 1st, what seemed to be 40 to 50,000 feet up and was moving north to northeast. 4 to 5 smaller lights appeared behind the main object at even spacing and maintained the same altitude and speed as the lead object. So he asked Denver Air Center Air Traffic Control if they had traffic at his 9 o'clock high. They replied negative, and he said, well, maybe it's space junk burning up. But another airliner on frequency said no, it was moving too horizontally and did not have a trail of burning debris. He agreed. The lights went out as they moved off to the north and east. The pilot of that airliner said that he'd seen many meteors while flying, and this was not a meteor. It was not a conventional aircraft, as it had no position light, no strobe, or anti-collision lights. He says he has about 17,000 plus hours of flying time over 40 years. He's a captain at a major airline and a retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel fighter pilot. This event, he said, was unlike anything else that he'd ever seen. And our thanks again to George Feiler and Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center for that one. Came in tonight, checked out my bunk, and there from the lovely Wendy Connors, Night Journeys in Ufology. Ufology, a primer in audio, 1947 to 1964. And this is the second edition. Been looking forward to hearing this. Wendy played some clips from it the last time she was on, and her stuff is just amazing. How much audio you can get on one CD nowadays with the technology the way it is. MP3 files are just mind-boggling. Is what they are. If you're intrigued by what I'm telling you about, go to virtuallystrange.net. Tonight's program listing, there's an animated GIF there with a whole bunch of Wendy's discs on there. Click that and it'll take you to fadeddiscs.com. Go check out what Wendy has available. Good crazy presents, if not a little late. So go take a quick look, make a quick order. You can pay by PayPal too. It's very handy. What an amazing, amazing piece of tape. The late Kenny Young came across back in 1996, completely a fluke that he came across it. The Trumbull County 911 Emergency Center's recording system on December 14th, 1994, recorded, first of all, people phoning in and reporting low-flying UFOs. And as we heard it last week in part one, the female 911 emergency operator was pretty much yucking it up in the beginning and talking about Star Trek and little green guys coming down and. But as time went on, a policeman in his patrol car radioed in and said, I'm seeing something out here. Things started to serious up pretty damn quickly. So let's go back to September 2000 when the late Kenny Young was on this program. Program 100 it was. And let's get into part two of the Trumbull County, Ohio police UFO chase.
County Dispatch, hi. Is that a Hutchins Road and Sampson Drive out in Liberty?
Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if I heard on the scanner where they were looking for that big blue.
Right, ma'am.
Yeah, did they find anything yet?
Not yet. The dispatcher for Liberty Township right now, she's speaking with the air base to see if they have possibly something in the area at this time.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I heard on the scanner. I thought it was running flying saucers since it wasn't very far from the ground.
Well, that's why she contacted them in case it might be a
balloon
or something.
Is the news media in on that?
I beg your pardon?
Did they call the news on that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I thought I heard in the scanner that they did. But they think it might be from the air base.
Right. Because, like I said, the Liberty Dispatch is on the phone right now speaking with the airbase.
And they think that's where it's from.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Ma'am. Bye-bye.
We've contacted the FAA administration and warned they've advised nothing on the radar scope within a 60-mile radius of Youngstown. They did advise they have no communication with any helicopters or any private-owned vehicles, air vehicles.
98, they're not aware of anything then, right?
Negative. He checked the radar and advised negative, nothing on radar within 60-mile radius of the Youngstown area. Again, he did verify they have no contact with any helicopter or private-owned vehicles that might be in the area. We are continually getting calls on this, so.
What's the area you're getting calls on?
Still Samson Fifth Avenue.
We're right there. I don't see anything up in the air now. How long ago did these calls come in?
This just in within two.
This is air radio. It's only visible to certain people. Some people with scanners. 98th radio.
Good.
If you get any more calls, try to get an address. I'd like to speak to the people making the call, please.
Copy.
998 radio.
98, good.
I'm going to be out of service for a few minutes. I have to gather my thoughts.
Happy gathering, 58.
That was an interesting segment, if you can read between the lines of the radio traffic there.
Yes.
The officer was clearly shaken.
Yeah.
This is a gentleman I did speak with during the 96th phase of the investigation, and I got from him the first indications of what the really big story this was. His description of it was of a massive object, a light, that he said was virtually at treetop level. He said people were all over the place watching this thing. This is the same gentleman whose cruiser was shut down by the object. The electrical instrumentation was shut down, and the car restarted after the object ascended back up into the sky. But en route to the scene of the disturbance, and you heard briefly a little while ago, he referenced the account, he encountered an elderly gentleman. He seemed to be wandering, dazed and lost, in the middle of the roadway. The officer said, "I regret now not getting the name of this person." But he approached the officer and said, "This thing was right above my house." He said that kind of made an impact on him as he headed to the scene, just knowing that there was possibly something going on here.
At the end of that segment, I think it was Unit 58 who said that he was going to take a break and try and gather his
and
thoughts.
And the dispatcher responded, "Copy, gathering."
Unit 58 was the one that was stalled.
Officer Malero is his name, Toby Malero. He was gracious enough to be interviewed for national television during the confirmation special. And that took a lot of courage to do that.
Yes, indeed.
A number of other officers also went on camera with their version of the story.
And I keep saying this, that we live in a world which science remains fairly skeptical about UFOs, citing lack of evidence. But these tapes that you're playing, these recordings from the Trumbull County police system, are really remarkable evidence.
Well, it constitutes disclosure of what we don't know, but we do know that there was a situation in progress that demonstrates the reality of unidentified flying object situation that did take place in 1994. Let me just get into another segment.
Okay.
98, good.
Yeah, I'm okay now. I'll be back in service.
59.
I'll also be in service. Phases are disarmed at this time.
Okay, your time's your accident. 23-20.
Came over my house, right? I said, "Are you serious?" "Oh, yeah, right." "Then you tell me you got a report of it on Fifth Avenue Extension, right?"
"Yeah."
"I'm right by Patty Metzinger's house, and I look towards Fifth Avenue Extension."
Uh-huh.
"You could see a red glow up in the sky. It was huge. It was like huge."
See, but they're telling me blue-green, because the media called. This woman was crying hysterically. She's like, "Oh, my God!" And she's screaming, and they're like, "Oh, God." They call me, and I'm laughing it off, because I can't, you know, I'm not going to cause a panic.
We don't be on dope or something. I see this, right?
No, because well, Toby, I swear to God, we got 7 to 8 calls on this UFO.
We're doing, they're scanning us.
No, I'm telling you what, they were coming in at the same time. They were coming at the same time.
Well, anyway, I see this.
And the county's to another channel to do it because they didn't want to be on their main.
Well, with me, I saw this big red sort of glow in the sky.
Well, that's what the guy said. He said it looked like fighter pilot lights in the back of the tail of a bomber.
Yeah, that's what it looked.
And I said, you know, I said, well, maybe it's a weather balloon. Well, I called up, and Toby, I swear to you, I was laughing it off, and I thought, well, he's going to say weather balloon or something, but he says, no, I don't. He goes, we have nothing. Because we have, and he's trying to give me numbers to report it, and I'm saying, no. I don't want any numbers. He's going, well, he goes, you know, I don't have anything in a 16-mile radius of Youngstown. He goes, I'm looking at the radar right now.
Well, this thing wasn't more than about 50 feet off the ground.
Well, that's what I told him. I said, this is low to the ground. I said, you might not pick it up. I said, you know, he goes, well, maybe it's a helicopter. I said, well, I heard from four people something that low to the ground would be making a hell of a noise.
This thing wasn't making no noise.
I know.
Because I rolled down, when I saw the glow, rolled down my window, I didn't hear a sound. The only sound I heard was my car.
Well, was it moving or was it just...
Yeah, it was glowing. It was moving. You could see it like up in the air, glowing and getting further away from me. That's why I had to go all the way down Overbrook and cut over to get on 5th Avenue. As soon as I turned off 5th Avenue, I didn't see Dick.
Did Bob see it?
No.
Did Steve see it?
No. I'm the only one that saw it.
There was about 10 other people in Liberty who were just swearing up and down. They saw a UFO.
The media probably have something.
Oh, they'll have a ball with it, because, I mean, they called already.
Well, what did they say? Did you guys locate anything?
Yeah, well, they're like, the people are serious. They're very upset. And I'm like, well, it's got to be a weather balloon or something. And I knew it wasn't a weather balloon, because they, you know, they would know about it.
Frosty said it was green and blue lights.
Green, well, no. The media said it was green and blue lights. I had a man who said it. He said that it's huge and it doesn't make any noise.
Yep, that's what I saw.
And I said, well, I said, could it be like a weather balloon? He goes, no. He goes, these lights are incredibly bright. And he goes, and this thing's just hovering. It's not moving. And I said, well, maybe it's a private plane or something.
Now, this thing, whatever it was, lit up, you could stand, if you were underneath it, you could see, it would be like daylight, but red light.
Well, I logged it. I know this is coming back up. I know everybody and their brother's going to be calling tomorrow. And I'm like, I logged it.
Did I saw it? Oh, my God.
No, I didn't log. You saw it. But you know what? They'll be pulling that tape. We're all going to get our asses shook. You watch, federal government will come on here and go, okay, we're going, oh, little green men, Santa Claus, flying Christmas tree, all this shit on the channel. We're all going to get our asses in a grinder. Maybe I won't. So, I don't know. If it was a UFO, it's logged, you know. But, I mean, you saw it. If you
saw
it.
Well,
what did you think it was? What did you really think it was?
I don't know. I didn't you hear me? I came across it. So whatever it is, it's big.
But you know what? I know you play. You know what I mean? I know you joke around. That's what I said.
I was not joking.
For a minute, it didn't sound like you were. I mean, you were laughing, and then all of a sudden, you weren't laughing. And I thought, well, maybe he's trying to make me, like, think there's really this UFO there. And I was like, oh.
No, I wasn't joking. I saw the light. I saw a large red light up
Hold on 1 second. Howling guy, I think I'm a UFO expert. He wants to talk to me. You want me to let you go?
Yeah, all right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, sweetheart. Take care. Bye-bye.
It was very obvious that the female dispatcher really expected the press to descend on them the next day, and yet they didn't.
The officer also did. In fact, if we caught that one part, he said something like, oh, no, they're going to come after me.
Right.
Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Nothing of the sort, as we know now, ever took place.
Mm.
No attention was afforded to this issue.
Any idea why there was no attention paid to it?
Well, it's just perhaps general apathy to the subject, perhaps. The issue was unceremoniously dropped. We do know, and let's name her name here, Stacy Adger with the Youngstown, Ohio Channel 33.
Mm-hmm.
She knew the story was going on. She had a scanner. She had received calls, so she heard the chase. your explanation is as good as mine there. I just think it's just general laziness myself as to why this situation was never pursued. I don't see anything conspiratorial, except if you want to say laziness is conspiratorial, perhaps that's our answer.
And of course, not being able to track down the radar operator at the airport, which you played earlier on, and him just not being interested in any of this stuff, despite the fact that it was a police dispatcher who was asking him questions.
Right. And we're going to hear in this upcoming segment a little more from the radar operator. And at this time, I'll start the tape where the incident's really just beginning to take off here.
County Dispatch, may I help you?
Yeah, this is Alan 433.
Hey, 433.
How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
Liberty was spotting earlier.
Oh, cut it out.
No, I'm serious. We've been watching it for about 10 minutes now.
Your ass.
No, I'm serious.
Man.
Go straight out your door.
Hold on, Rick.
I'm on Henhide.
Where is it at?
I'm on Henhide, okay?
Come get me. I want to go see this. Is it outside? Can I, like, see it from here?
Oh, you'll see it.
Here.
I can't believe
plug
it.
Plug into me. All right, I'm going to go out and look at it now.
All right, if you're up high enough, it's straight east of you.
It's east of me?
Straight east of you. Look straight
which,
up.
Which way do I go when I, okay, up.
You know where Kane Drive is across from the hospital?
Plug in for me. I'm going to go out. Liberty, get Holland Liberty. I'm going to run out. Stay on the phone.
Okay.
Okay, I'm coming back. I'll tell you if I see it.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Mikey, do you got a copy or see it? Yeah, that thing has not moved in 10 minutes that I've been watching it. Come up on Henhide and start south off of King's Grave if you're on Henhide. Come on down, you'll see me parked. I've been watching this thing through my binoculars. I can't quite make it out. It changes colors from white to red to green. You know, those are colors of planes, but the sucker has not moved. It hasn't gone any direction since I've been watching it. It's a good 10 minutes.
It's an alien. It's an alien.
Yeah, it's an alien, all right.
Prove it.
Hello.
She went outside. She was back in a minute.
Okay. I couldn't believe it. I was just putting by my house, and I looked over, you know, laughingly thinking, because we had one 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked over, and I said, oh, here's a plane coming in to land, you know, because I'm used to seeing those. This thing has not moved in 10 minutes.
Huh.
And it's too bright and too low, and it changes colors to be a star.
It's an alien that came down to steal all our Christmas presents.
Yeah, I wish. Hang on,
and it's Santa Claus.
Go ahead, 429.
Where are you at?
You see my car down on Henhide, about half to a quarter of a mile, somewhere in there, down from King's Grave.
Okay, you got a pretty good view out here on King's Grave. A little bit further.
Okay, you see it? I mean, I got a perfect view where I'm at. I just can't quite make it out through my binoculars.
I got me my headset.
Can you go to 14?
Right, I'm on public service too, so hang on, I'm trying to juggle mics.
Right.
Okay, I'm on 14. You got a copy?
Yeah, it looks like I'm getting pretty close here, but I can't really judge how far out it is, you know?
Oh, I've been stationary since I called you. You know, however long it took you to come from over on the west side, that bugger has not moved.
Yeah, well, I'm going over 11 right now, and it's,
looks
like I'm starting to maybe get next to it here. It's still out a good ways.
It? Is that just no, see it down over here just above the trees. Yeah. Okay, has it moved any? It looked like it might have flickered a little in that because it's moving slightly.
It's just
the binoculars.
Could get a pretty good eye on it.
Okay, Mikey's up here with me now. He's looking through the binocs. It looks like it might have moved just slightly because it moved from one side of a tree to another. But it's still visible right here where we're at.
Over Route 11.
Route
11.
There's about the ridge already. Ridge at the airbase.
You say you're at Ridge at the airbase? Okay, it should be south of you, right?
UFO.
Looks like it's doing circles.
Looks like it's doing circles, Tina?
Yeah.
Because it isn't moving.
What area is it in?
Huh?
What area?
Hang on one sec. Davey. So what area do you think it's in now? Hang on a minute. Okay, where you're at and where I'm at, I'm about half a mile south of King's Grave on Henhide.
Henhide, half a mile south of King's Grave.
It's
it's still a little bit south of me. So where are you at as far as on Ridge Road?
Do you guys have to take pee tests and all that, Alan? Because we went outside. We didn't see anything.
But I don't really have to doubt. I'm out here. Coming up on the main gate.
They all see it. We were all on Hen Hide. We didn't see it.
Okay, well, we're on Hen Hide north of Kane's. Okay, there's a brand new house under construction, and we're watching it right through the empty field.
You're seeing it through the field?
Yeah, we're seeing all our cars.
How big is it? What color is it? Because I got three of them.
It ranges from like a whitish red to pulsating greenish lavender.
Do you see any red? It was a whole red light. He said it looked like.
Well, from the distance, I mean, I can't tell. My binoculars are a cheap set of binoculars. I thought I saw some red. Let me check with Dave from his angle. Do you see red and green on it? Hey, Dave, from your angle,
I'll call the airport.
Pulsating red and green.
I'm telling you, we went outside, we didn't see anything.
Yeah, what?
I'm calling the airbase again.
Okay.
Hold on, just stay on the line.
Don't move. I'd gladly come down, pick you up in the car, and bring you.
I want to see it. Come get me.
All right.
Come get me.
All right.
I'll be outside. All right.
Okay.
All right. I need a break. He's gonna take me to see it.
This next segment's when they're going to try once again to contact the FAA tower operator. Here we go.
Okay.
Where's the number I had before? Here it is. About Liberty Township.
Yes,
the darn thing is in Howland Township now, and it's hovering over a site. Do you show anything at all on your radar screen in the Warren area?
In Howland Township.
Howland Township.
That's hovering where?
Hovering over a Hen Hide in Howland Township, about 5 minutes here from the center. They're seeing this. They're watching this thing. It goes 50 feet from the ground. There's blue and green lights. Some people say they see a red holding light. Hovers about 50 feet from the ground with no noise. We've had this all night.
I'm here, looking to the west. Yeah, I don't see anything. I'm 70 feet in the air.
I'm going about to look for this right now. My unit's coming out of there. Tell me when he's out here.
Okay, let me get a pair of binoculars. Let me call
Can you check that? Let me give you a number to contact, 675-2549.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
I'm going to look at it now myself.
All right.
Bye-bye.
When I spoke with the officers during the 96 phase of the investigation, I spoke with several of them, and I kind of received a collective bafflement from all of them that the tower operator could not see this. They said at his elevation at 70 foot off the ground that he should have seen this object.
Yeah, he should have been looking down at it from the sounds of it.
Sure, even more so as the pursuit, we call it, continues on the tape, which we won't have time to hear all of. But as the pursuit continues on, one officer goes to this airbase. He pulls up to the gate out front, and he gets out of the gate, and he talks with the guard at the guard shack, and he points to this object, and they said, "Do you know what this is?" And he says, "No, I don't know what it is."
So the guard could actually see the object that the guy 70 feet up in a control tower could not.
Go figure. What can you say about that?
We have probably about 7 or 8 minutes left.
Okay. Well, time is our enemy here.
Indeed.
So we're going to delete a major portion of the tape just so we can get the last segment in here.
Okay.
What we're going to skip over is a segment we call the police pursuit, which is really hard to listen to. It contains heavy radio traffic, a lot of noise, a lot of static. During the tape, we hear many officers converge upon this object from different positions. They triangulate its position in the area, which rules out a lot of astronomical
phenomena, Venus
possibility. So this last segment is the Howland Township police officer talking with a dispatcher on his end.
Dispatcher.
Steve Baker.
Yeah.
All right,
talked to these guys. Everything's all right. They're going to go back to where they came from.
Who?
I can see them.
Did you see anything?
I got them right here. I'm looking at them.
What the hell is it?
Hold on a second. I got to turn my lights on before I get rear-ended.
Okay.
Well, I can see them from Warner Road. They're sitting stationary. I got three of them.
Uh-huh.
One is over, well, there, and then there's two kind of close together.
What do they look like?
Well, I'd like to say that they're just like flickering stars,
uh-huh.
Except I've got four discernible colors.
Uh-huh.
I got red, yellow, green, and blue, and the one just was like flashing. So if they're those planets those guys were talking about,
uh-huh.
Then they're planets with Christmas lights on.
You can see them?
I can see them. Not like clear as day. I don't see any wings or anything.
Uh-huh.
To see them.
But you see lights?
Know. Yeah.
Unreal.
Hold on a second.
Unreal. What are you doing?
That's what I mean. I mean, I can, without my binoculars, I can see red, yellow, green, and blue.
Okay.
I mean, we're way over there. They got to be way over in Cortland.
No. Did you hear Cortland on the air?
Yeah.
Even UFOs will come into Cortland.
I can't believe it.
He's killing me. So you're having an experience?
No, because I can't see. They're so far away. They look like stars.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like teeny tiny.
Well, the first calls we got from Liberty were they were like 50 feet above the ground.
Yeah, well, they could be on their way home.
All right. I think everyone else in this county should go home.
Yeah, I'm about ready to. This is weird. I had a beat on them from the tower. They were close. They got to be going away because they were closer than this. Now I'm looking at them. Oh, my God.
What?
And they're not a plane because here goes a plane. And I can see the plane and the plane is blinking red. And the fact that there's another plane, I think.
I think they're scrambling planes out of SATCOM 1 to go check them out.
Wait a minute.
What?
Oh, my God. I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus Christ, please be a plane. Oh, please.
What? What did you
say? I ain't ready for this shit. Hold on. Little bitch, where'd you go? At the plane. Oh, thank God. Well, I get nervous when they're coming right at me. There's three planes up there. I'll tell you what, they're flying from the Air Force Base.
Really?
Something's got to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hold on. I'm about to get drilled again.
Where are you?
Right here.
Wait, where are you?
Warner Road, south of, Frick. All right, what are we doing with this now, Pete?
Well, I have no idea.
Well, you know what? I can tell it's not in our airspace, so it ain't our call.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
That guy sounded most unhappy about this thing flying toward him.
Well, as the event progressed, one thing I neglected to mention there was that multiple objects were seen, and this was not just this one gentleman. Other officers were reporting objects in different parts of the county. So that complicated the whole situation, which was already, I guess, complicated to start with. But we're left with a lot of questions. I know that after the confirmation special, one thing that interested me was the reaction from certain people that were somewhat skeptical to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who I suspect maybe had an agenda came out of nowhere and tried to attribute this case to twinkling stars. And when we really evaluate the case data, we can easily discount that because simply to apply that explanation is really disregarding the data of the case.
And is disrespectful to these men in uniform.
Well, of course. I'm willing to acknowledge that mistaken observations happen and happen frequently. But in this case, I think we've got some quality observations that were documented and recorded here on these 911 tapes. And in the process of interviewing a witness, this is really what struck me. During the 96th phase of the investigation, when I conducted the interviews with the officers, I talked to one officer who was standing on the road and watching this thing, and I said, "What did it look like?" And they said, "This was nothing more than a massive red rotating saucer, a physical object." And I was trying to poke for flaws in the story or description. Was it just a light? Was it just something you could see through? Was it transparent? No. This was a saucer that rotated as if it were on an axis.
Were you given an idea of the size?
Well, the size was something that basically the word massive were used
okay,
to attribute
enough.
To the
yes,
object.
Yes.
One thing that interested me was one particular astronomer, James McGahey, came forward on the confirmation special and totally disregarded all this testimony to the contrary.
For a former Air Force pilot, this man is an idiot.
I won't go that far, but I will say that I did attempt to contact him. The gentleman did not respond to me. I laid out a number of issues that I wanted to discuss with him.
Mm-hmm.
No response. His attitude of non-responsiveness to discussion on this sort of reminds me of a lot of these politicians we read about in the papers today that will not hold news conferences to address the hard questions. In other words, they can proclaim anything as long as they don't have to answer questions about it.
Investigation by proclamation, as Friedman says, yes.
There you go. So that's what was used in this case. He said this was simply a case of twinkling stars and misidentification of planets. We looked at star charts, mm-hmm. and there was nothing that would have really been outstanding that night that would have caught the eyes of these officers and made them be misled. So he suggested that this was a meteor that came down right at the moment that the officer's car stalled. How likely is that? You know, not very likely, I don't.
Just blindly ignoring the evidence and desperately grasping for a logical explanation.
Well, they almost have to in mm-hmm. this case if they're wanting to support an ideology. But here we're dealing with evidence of an incident that they have to put a spin on were they to have an agenda,
mm-hmm.
and they had to do that. This gives them, you know, an agenda to fulfill.
Kenny, we're out of time.
Well, Errol, it's been my pleasure.
It's been our pleasure. This is a really remarkable tape that you've come up with.
Sure, and I thank you for having me on the show.
And thank you for being here, Kenny Young. You're doing amazing work, and keep it up. Thanks, Kenny.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Good night, man.
Strange days.
Sure do miss Kenny Young. He contributed a lot to the UFO updates list. He contributed a lot to the field, and he died way too young and far too early. And another dedicated man, dedicated investigator who never got to find out during his lifetime what all of this was about. Maybe he knows now, though. Okay, down to New York, and John Velez, who has been with this program since the outset, is back with us after a hiatus as a regular contributor. John, it's good to have you back again.
It's good to be back, Errol. It's always great to spend a little time with you.
I have heard that Trumbull County police chase I don't know how many times, and it's still
deeply impressive. Every time I hear it, I agree.
It's amazing, amazing. I know that a couple of the police officers who were involved in that chase, including the guy who had his patrol car completely shut down by this massive object that was hovering over it, interviewed on the confirmation special that was made 5 years ago and aired, and I think it was on NBC. And I have to wonder how those guys feel about their experiences today.
Oh, I'm sure there's been an evolutionary process that's taken place. Everybody goes through it. David Jacobs wrote a brilliant paper in the late 90s called Post-Abduction Syndrome, which applies equally as well to people who have had close encounters with unidentified flying objects. The effects on the witness are the same in both cases. There's layers of reality that we're dealing with here. On the surface level, there's the report itself, and the listeners are at home comfortably or in their car or wherever they happen to be listening right now and absorbing the report on an intellectual level where they're, you know, listening to the details of, you know, what the object looked like, what was seen, where it was, what was going on at the time, and fascinated by the story. And I guess because of my position as a witness, although, you know, you describe me as an abductee activist, I like to think of myself as a witness advocate. In spite of all the public work that I've done over the years, 98% of the real work that I've done in ufology has been behind the scenes working directly with the witnesses and the experiencers. And I've been privy to the toll it takes on the human side I guess maybe more so than others, you know, because of the fact that people were writing me letters and wanted to talk to me and wanted to ask a bunch of questions, you know, about experiences they had had, sightings they had had. So that there's those two layers of reality to the phenomena. On the surface, there's the reports and the fascination with the reports. But then there's this other level of reality that the witnesses have to deal with that nobody really thinks about or pays attention to. When you read a report, you usually, if the information is included, of course, but you usually provide a little description of the witness's reaction to the sighting. Tonight was a perfect example. The first sighting that you read early on this evening, the witness, you described the witness as being stunned and confused. This is the stuff I hear when I listen to a report. Of course, I'm paying attention to the description of the object and all of that, but I'm also paying very close attention to how the people reacted, because that gives me a lot of information about the event as well. The police officer in Trumbull, Ohio, when he ran into that old gentleman that was just wandering through the streets, he described him as being dazed and lost. The operator described the woman that called in as she was crying hysterically.
Yep.
These are very, very powerful human emotions. The cop, when he thought that those UFOs were coming toward him, began to pray out loud. He was praying, oh God, don't let that be an airplane. Oh God, I'm not ready for this. Those emotions reveal a layer to the UFO phenomena that's never discussed, that nobody ever focuses on. I can tell you from firsthand experience myself, my own experiences, and from working with people for 5, 6, 7 years when I was doing the online version of the Intruders Foundation for Bud Hopkins, that people are profoundly and deeply affected and permanently affected by these sightings, and not always in a positive way.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome, some of them.
I think the first victim of a UFO sighting is an individual's world view. We're all raised to believe that, you know, certain things are possible and certain things are not possible. UFOs usually belonging to the not possible category. And when you're confronted with something, when your eyes and your senses are telling you that something is there that you believe shouldn't be there.
Yeah, your brain is saying, no, no, you can't be seeing this.
Yeah, you go into a state of cognitive dissonance. You know? Your brain is telling you that this shouldn't be there, but your eyes are telling you that, yes, in fact, there is something there. The first victim is your belief systems about the world. You immediately have to begin questioning everything, you know, not just the existence of UFOs. All of a sudden, everything gets called into question. And that's the kind of thing that happens to people usually as a result of a trauma, the loss of a loved one, catastrophic illness in the family. You know, those are the kind of things that have a tendency to shatter your world. It has a very profound and, like I said, permanent effect on the people that are lucky or unlucky enough to witness these things.
It's a ripple-down effect, too, because it's not just the witness who goes through the changes, but it's the family, the friends, the people that they're really, really close to around them who are also affected by that.
Yes.
And the reaction of those people to the witness and the witness's story, you know, there's either an acceptance or, uh-oh, he's going off the deep end.
Well, we're dealing with human beings, Errol, you know, and because of the nature of individual psychology, individuals react in different ways.
Yes.
My ex-wife was a perfect example. Some people who acknowledge the reality of the events that they've experienced choose not to have anything to do with it, develop the sensitivity to the subject that borders on, you know, neurosis. The reactions are almost unreasonable. And my wife would become deeply upset, infuriated, angry at the mere mention of the subject. her level of sensitivity was such that it upset her just hearing the subject mentioned.
And that's because she went through experiences herself, not because she was reacting to the experiences that you'd had.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I went the other way. My way of dealing with it was by facing it head on, attacking it head on, and going public, basically. I felt responsible about standing up and being counted and letting the world know that, hey, something is going on. I wanted to lend my number to the thousands of other voices that are crying out and saying, hey, something is going on, and nobody's paid attention so far. You know, for some reason, the human factor is like a secondary consideration when it should be the primary one.
What was your immediate reaction to your first experience, John? Was it denial? Or was it an acceptance? Or what the hell was that?
I think denial, sublimation. You know what it is, Errol? You struggle to pigeonhole it and put a handle on it, something that allows you to feel like you have some control over the situation. All my life I've been having these experiences and sightings and things like that, and I always wrote them off as vivid dreams. It must have been my imagination. In terms of the sightings, I would just push them anytime they would surface, and believe me, they surface regularly. These experiences will pop up into your consciousness and demand attention. If something happened, something important happened, and you know it, and in spite of your inability to make any sense of it, you know, in my case, I would just push it back and say, look, I can't think about it because it would boggle my mind. It would leave me in a state of confusion, disorientation, like the first witness you reported, you know, stunned and confused.
Yes. One shouldn't be surprised. I can't imagine how people that I know, you know, that's just old Errol and he's doing his thing on the woo-woo flying saucer thing. I can't imagine how they would react were they to have an experience of the kind that I've had and that you've had.
Yeah. If it hadn't been for previous experience in my life, I don't know how well I would have handled this when it came up. You know, you have to understand, I wasn't into UFOs. I didn't know anything about UFOs. I had heard about abduction because of the Barney and the Betty Hill case and all the publicity that got. You know, I knew about UFOs, and I had a little curiosity about it, but I never read any of the literature. I never attended conferences or lectures or anything. It wasn't until I reached middle age, I was in my 40s, when quite accidentally got my hands on Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time, that I found anything that related to my own experiences, but not just related to them, that fit them to a T.
We have been listening for the last couple of weeks, a rerun of an interview that I did with the late Kenny Young back in September of 2000, the Trumbull County police chase, where a bunch of cops down in Ohio chased a bunch of UFOs all over the county, and their reactions and the reactions in the beginning of the 911 dispatchers, they went from yucking it up to being deadly serious about what it was that they were going through.
And frightened.
And frightened. We didn't have time to play it all. Fortunately, Kenny had sent me a copy of those tapes, which I have in my archive here. And in listening to the 90 minutes worth of stuff
That's important evidence, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. They say there is no evidence of UFOs. Well, I don't know what these cops were chasing, but they certainly weren't helicopters, or as McGahey, the very strange man who claims to be an astronomer and a member of PSYCOP, the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal. I mean, these people are just complete incompetent boobs. They, you know, they shouldn't be let anywhere near a microphone or a reporter's pencil. And McGahey described what the police were reporting as being, misidentification of stars.
Twinkling lights in the night sky.
This massive UFO hovering over a police car cuts all the electrics out on that car, and it's hovering 50 feet above the cop. the cop who goes into court and gives evidence in all kinds of cases. But he couldn't identify this massive circular disk with its flashing lights all over it. He must have misidentified stars.
It's a form of denial, Errol. Some people go into denial. When a subject strikes too close to home or is too threatening or too frightening. See that now, here's a skeptic having a perfectly within normal ranges human reaction to a stress-inducing situation.
Yeah, but he wasn't involved at all. He just opened his big yap and came out with all of this nonsense.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, he's been on several television documentaries, and my dad, bless his old socks, called me from Peterborough one night and said, are you watching this on Discovery Channel? And I said, yeah. He said, who is this?
Who is this guy?
Who is this bleeping idiot?
Yeah, I don't know where they find these people.
My dad is open-minded. And obviously, McGahey was just talking utter nonsense in that documentary and in regard to Trumbull County. It's investigation by proclamation, as we decided, Kenny Young and I, back in 2000, and as Stanton Friedman has pointed out many times.
Well, the real damage that that kind of thing does is that it sweeps the human element under the rug. It gets just completely dismissed and ignored, and a lot of people out there are left to fend for themselves. Abductees are a perfect example of that. Here is a group of people, of witnesses, who have had their lives turned upside down in some cases, traumatized by these experiences, that have absolutely no recourse in terms of help from the mental health community for counseling purposes, not because they're insane, but just to help them cope and deal with their own reactions to the experiences mm-hmm. that they've had. You asked me about the first time I found out. The first realization I had, I was reading Missing Time, and a couple of little events led up to this, but what happened was, as I was reading the accounts of the abductees, I began to, you know, I said, hold on, wait a second, I remember that, and that happened to me, and I remember seeing something like that, and that happened to me, and that happened to me, and I was identifying with these genuinely odd experiences that these people were reporting, and my first reaction to it was anger. I got angry. I said, this guy, Bud Hopkins, is using these people. He's taking things that happen to people in general and turning them into this alien scenario so he can write these stories and, you know, make money selling his books. And my first reaction was anger. But immediately following that anger response, and I recognized it right away, I was scared. I started to get really, really scared that this thing could possibly be real and could possibly involve me in my life. And just the mere fact that I was entertaining it as a possibility caused me to start doubting my own sanity. I said, my God, am I slipping here? I'm actually, considering this. So it's an extremely disorienting, confusing, and can be very frightening experience, even to acknowledge the experience as a reality. I've had people contact me, Errol, that were in a state when they got to me. And I just saw it as my sworn duty, not so much to deal with the UFO material or anything that may have happened to them during these abductions, as much as to tend to them as human beings. And my way of doing that was by helping to shift their focus back to their own lives, to help them reclaim their own lives and plugging them back into their families and their friends and their careers and telling them to put their focus on the things that are really important to them and that they care about. And that kind of grounding process, by grounding someone in their own reality and their own personality and their own selfhood, has a very, very healing effect in a lot of these cases. It doesn't minimize the impact or the trauma or the effects on the individual's personality and behavior afterwards, but it does help them get through that initial shock, that initial period of learning how to deal with this, because we each have to find our own way of living with it. Otherwise, I'd be sitting in an institution somewhere chewing on Prozac, okay? You know, I'm not Superman. This hasn't been easy.
I guess it hasn't, and it continues not to be easy for many, many people. It's not something that you can switch off with any degree of ease or simplicity. You were fortunate in that you ran into Bud Hopkins.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot of Bud Hopkinses in this world that we live in, and the way Bud has been health-wise, he's not been too active doing what he has done over the years. Where do people go?
Nowhere, Errol. And like I said, people are being left to fend for themselves because we're reaching a point in history now where John Mack is no longer around. Ray Fowler retired. Bud is getting on in years now and experiencing. He has a couple of health issues, so he's not as active as he was before. Dave Jacobs, although he's still active, is not as active as he has been in years past. And there are very few reliable people that you can safely go to with this and hope to get some kind of help with it. I, at one time, had compiled a list of people across the country that we had screened and interviewed and spent time with and got to know. And once we felt confident in these people, we started referring any individuals that contacted us from that state. You know, we wanted to refer them to someone local to be able to refer them to a local individual to get help. But that network started to fall apart in the late 90s. And I honestly don't know where someone would go. People are free to write to me. I'm always happy to listen and help in any way I can. But it's not what I do. When I was doing that, it was taking 14, 15, 16 hours of every single day of my life to do it. And I'm talking about 7 days a week. An unpaid full-time job, and as a result caused a lot of friction in my family, my relationships as well, because I was spending all my time answering email and responding to these cries for help and information. There's just not enough people out there that are concerned about these folks and that make themselves and their services available to people who need some help, some to learn how to deal with these things, because it's not easy.
It seems to me in the same way that some people say UFO sightings have gone down, which they haven't, it would appear that the number of reports from experiencers or abductees, they seem to have gone down over the last 10 years, say.
I'd say dramatically. I have not had a fresh report or a letter or a contact from an abductee in at least 5 or 6 years. Now, this was something that came up in conversation a couple of years ago, and I had an opportunity to speak to Will Boucher, who worked with John Mack for many years, was my counterpart in John Mack's group. Will had as much access to experiencers as I did. Will concurs with me that, no, he, in fact, has not heard any new reports, which has an ominous feel to us.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking, I wonder what that's about. Does that mean it's all over for us? Is the experiment over?
It's the end of one thing, but the beginning of what? The question arises, well, what's next? And if that phase of it is over, what was that all about? There was an awful lot of gathering of genetic material and reports of hybrid beings being created during all of this. All of that's kind of gone by the boards. My biggest fear is that if enough time goes by without fresh reports or attention being brought to the subject, that the whole topic of abduction will one day just fade into the mists, and there'll never be any kind of resolution or closure for the experiences. My hope and my prayer is that within our lifetime we'll get some kind of an answer to all of this, but who knows?
The more time goes by, the more I'm convinced that I won't find out until after I pass. You know?
I'm not so sure about that. I'm still waiting for the Mayan calendar date to come up to the Mayan end of the world. What is that, December 23rd, 2012?
Yes.
The return of the sky gods. I'll wait for December. Let's try to make it to 2012, Errol.
Well, as the Brazilian guy said, and we talked about on this program last week, something's going to happen between now and the end of March. So
yeah, we've heard
next.
So many of them.
Oh, yeah, over and over. It's all a bunch of old dung fooey, really.
Well, let's see. You know, maybe this guy is the one. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe this one's right. Who knows? But we'll all find out together. I mean,
yeah.
The good news is that whatever happens is going to happen to all of us at the same time.
At the same time.
So we'll all be in the same boat.
I'm not looking forward to it, but it'll be interesting to see what transpires. John Velez, thank you very much.
Thank you, Errol. And if I might just take 30 seconds to say hello to a very, very special friend who's listening for the first time. Hiya, Bev.
Yay. Hello, Bev. And welcome to the audience of hundreds of thousands. John, we shall talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Errol. It's always great.
To you folk out there, all over the planet, we look forward to talking with you again next Saturday night, or whatever time of the day and night it is that you listen. Thanks to Jim Pacheco at CJAD in Montreal, Julian McNabb, thank you, sir. And that's it. Oh, what's that up in the sky? I don't know.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Chip Productions. Join us again next Saturday for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network. Good night.